Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the Sunday night edition of TS Radio. It's been another dismal week here in Minnesota, and while cable news reports that we're suffering a severe drought and the ungodly effects of global warming, we're 20 degrees below normal for the third straight week in a row, and if it rains anymore, we're all going to have to head for high ground and grab our little boats. But anyway, that aside, tonight we have another guest coming on that this story is just absolutely heartbreaking. It's from here in Minnesota, and I am looking for people here in Minnesota. I want to kind of try to gather people up so that we can more or less form either a citizens committee or some other sort of coalition. We've got to approach these state senators and representatives, this issue of the human trafficking of our elderly and of disabled adults has got to stop. And the only way I know to do it is to confront the people who actually make the laws. Now, when you contact any of these people, their first response is, well, I can't do anything about it because we just make the laws, we don't enforce them. Well, what's the point of making laws if nobody's enforcing them? And why do the laws only apply to the victims and their families, but not to the perpetrators and the predators? That's a question that nobody seems to want to answer. Now, in having tried to contact several state legislators, of course, I get a staffer. You're never allowed to speak to the actual representative or senator because they're very special people. And their immediate response is, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard of such a thing. Well, if it just happened to one or two people, you know, they need to get their story straight. And when I tell them it isn't one or two, it's hundreds, if not thousands, of families that have been affected by this, who have been disinherited, who have seen their elder parent abused, neglected, chemically restrained for no reason. They say, well, I guess there is a reason to keep them quiet and keep them from complaining. When they are isolated, when they are moved to locations where the family can't visit them, can't know where they are, we've got a problem. And when I explain this to them, and that there are many, many people, and this goes on daily in the courtrooms, of course, they always feign shock, and how could you say such a thing, and we depend on our courts, you know. Well, you need to depend on something else, because the last place you're going to find justice in this country is in our courts, and especially when you get down on the family and probate level. The last place you will find justice is there. But on one good note this week, Sarah Harvey, and many of you know Sarah and Gary Harvey's story, who has fought relentlessly not only for her husband's life but for access to him as his wife, won in court when they tried to sever her visitation. I mean, after all, being somebody's wife should what does that have to do with anything? And they tried to stop her from seeing her husband altogether. And the two people who were moving to sever her relationship with her husband and her right to visit with him didn't even show up in court. Sarah said that the judge actually, instead of holding an ex parte meeting, held a court and said that she wanted it on the record and that she would not allow this to happen. So that was one good thing that happened this week, and as long as we can find one good thing that happens during the week, we can count ourselves lucky. And because it's a rare event when it does happen. In other news, I actually don't know where we're going to go with all of this. People are literally coming out of the woodwork with the most horrendous stories. And as I've said each week, every time I think it's gotten as bad as it can get, it just gets worse. And we see people in the most terrible of conditions. We see them being abused, neglected, medicated to death, their estates looted and robbed, their families in shambles, everything destroyed in the wake of these predators who are operating under the protection of the probate court and many times in cooperation with. Everybody's getting a piece of the action. And one of the things I want to address when I can get in front of legislators, and I will get there if I have to storm the castle, is the fact that there is no reason the victim, the target of these situations, should be forced to pay for their own prosecution and persecution. And under no conditions should anyone lose their right to due process, to have an attorney present, although I wouldn't recommend it. That's my personal opinion. That's a, like throwing money in a tornado. And or to have a family member present, and to stop these judges from discarding legally constructed wills, documents, powers of attorney, medical directives, and anything else that gets in the way of the looting of that estate. And the other thing I think is very important is within the instance of disabled adults, which we are going to be talking about this evening. These people are virtual cash cows inside the medical system. And as many of you know, the DOJ here just in the last year in seven different states nailed several different medical providers of various kinds for fraud in relation to Medicare, Medicaid, padding their bill, billing for services they never rendered, billing 2 to 3 times what the normal charge was, doing all sorts of things. And this totaled up just for this last year, $5.4 billion, that's with a B, dollars in money that was charged off. But, you know, I kept following that issue, and yes, they went after them, and yes, they cited them, and yes, they assessed these fines, penalties, and this recovery of fees. Only thing is, nobody's paid them, and nobody has any intention of paying them. Now, when they talk about Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, the only people who can actually fraud either one of those is the medical industry, is the insurance industry, is the pharmaceutical industry. They are the people who have cost these systems billions and billions in dollars in fraudulent charges, and nothing is done about it. They make a big blow about how, oh yeah, they went after them and they got them, and boy, isn't this great. Yeah, it is, if anybody would actually do anything about it, but they're not going to. And it's all fluff and show. And you would think, and maybe I'm wrong here, I am quite frequently, but I hate to admit it, but you would think that opening this can of worms and seeing the fraud perpetrated by these companies and medical providers across the country would be a big red flag that something is going on in this system that shouldn't be. And they need to look at whose bills were padded, who was charged for services they didn't receive, whose insurance, you know, was tapped. There again, the Sarah and Gary Harvey case. You look at that, and over $1 million, I think it was $1.2 million last year, charged to the insurance company, and this didn't sound an alarm somewhere that something is wrong. Why would it cost $1.2 million to keep a man in a hospital that you're not providing any services for? Now, see, if that was me, I'd be going after that and investigating that and looking into it. But we need to look at who is the target, who is the victim of these actions. And yet they never do. They never pull back the curtain. They never look at this. And we see this constant draining of the system. And then when this happens, they come out and say, oh, Medicare needs them. We're going to have to cut benefits. It isn't the people on Medicare who are frauding the system. It's the people who are billing Medicare who are frauding the system. And they never talk about the fact that premiums have to be paid on Medicare. The least amount you can pay, as I understand it, is $92 a month. But the average amount an individual, married or not, pays for Medicare coverage is $382 a month. All of this is being funneled back into Medicare after you worked and paid into Medicare with the special FICA taxes that apply to that. And yet somehow this system is supposedly going broke. And so we need to take a look at all of this. We need to look at what's going on and who's actually doing the deed and why nobody is holding their feet to the fire to put a stop to this. And in all of this, of course, is our elders and disabled adults and the trafficking of human beings. Just because it's government sanctioned, just because one of these phony kangaroo probate courts says it's okay, it does not make it any less of an instance of human trafficking. What's the difference whether you hold somebody in a cage for profit, whether it's for sex or whatever, or you hold somebody in an institution against their will and you steal from them? This is grand larceny perpetrated through and by the courts. It's grand larceny. If you did this in everyday life outside of these courts, they would come after you and punish you severely. But because it's done through these courts, the theft of estates has reached billions a year. They're estimating $3 billion annually is stolen from estates by these predators. This is from the Government Accountability Office. And yet, state or federal, these legislators sit there and do nothing, pretend they don't know about it. Oh, they wrote a new bill and they refunded adult protective services. Well, that's kind of like, you know, funding the local burglar, you know, so he's got a nice car to drive. And until we get this out of a quota system where they have to produce X numbers of bodies in order to get their funding, to get their paycheck and keep their office open, until that ends, we're going to continue to have this problem. And I think our guest has joined us here. Tammy? Apparently not. And so these are some of the things we're looking at. I have concluded that it is absolutely pointless to go to the federal level. These people aren't remotely interested in us or what's happening to us. They could just give a fly and flip. They don't care. They don't want to be bothered with us. It has to happen in our states. And that means that we have got to get together with groups like the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse. We have got to get together with these coalitions that are starting up. I don't know if any of you are on LinkedIn, but there are a huge, huge number of groups that are gathering in response to not only the Child Protective Service rings that operate and the stealing and abduction of children for profit. And we got one judge. That one judge, of course, got nailed for selling kids off to companies he was involved in. But that's not enough. That's not enough. We need to charge these people. We need to charge them with criminal processes, because these are crimes. These are not... This isn't just some little misdemeanor. This isn't just some little thing that went wrong. This is criminal activity, and it needs to be gotten out of the probate courts and into the criminal courts. And due process has got to be observed. There is no reason for anyone, especially in a vulnerable position, to lose their right to due process. Friday evening, I had Sherry Palmer and Ron Palmer on a show, and they've come out with the book called Not in the Child's Best Interest, and it's about family court. And reading through it, they sent me a complimentary copy, and reading through it, we are looking at the system that actually runs probate. It's all predicated on these family courts. And here again, these people are claiming that you have no right to your children unless the court says you do. And their whole thrust was, you have every right to your child and the court should not be intervening. The book is very well written, very understandable, and it actually gives you a template of sorts to use to preserve your rights and protect your children. But we need something in place to protect our elderly adults. we need something in place that will take care of them. We've got a caller on here, Tammy. It's still not her. My goodness, where is our guest? that's going to fix it. But anyway, so we're doing these things, and we're all working on this, but we're up against a system that's firmly in place that is operating with the protection of the Bar Association, with these phony judicial oversight boards, and above them is our state and federal legislators that refuse to acknowledge the depth of this problem, that refuse to acknowledge that they know anything about this problem. And there you are. So it's how do we break down that wall and make them listen? And I'm just one of those people that's just, I guess you'd say, obnoxious enough. I'll do it. You know, if I can catch them anywhere, I'll do it. And I thought, too, about actually just showing up at the Minnesota legislature and demanding time as a citizen. Now, I've tried to contact, like I say, several legislators here in the state, their staffers, why they just never heard of such a thing. And where did I come up with something like that? Why, that's the most ridiculous thing they ever heard. And a lot of people come to them with these wild stories. And I said to one woman in my local representative, Udall's office, I said, well, you know, here's the thing. A lot of times these wild stories people come up with turn out to be what's actually happening. And so don't you think it would be worth the representative's time to at least get a handle on this, get a jump on it? Because I said, eventually, this is going to be exposed. One way or another, it's going to be exposed. And so they basically just... Well, they just didn't know about it, and they'd tell the representative, and if he wanted to talk to me, he'd call, and I said, well, you know, I'll just sit right here by the phone and wait, because I'm sure he'll call me right back. And, of course, he never did. But this is just the way this goes, and it appears to me that our guest is not going to show up. So I don't know what to do here. If anybody wants to call in, if you got anything to say, any news, anything's come up the pipe, let us know. In the meantime, we still have not found the whereabouts of June E. Gwynn. So I don't know what the status of that is. Linda Kincaid had gotten in contact with the people involved in that, and hopefully she can help them out. And it just seems that everywhere we turn, these cases are there. And they get worse and worse and worse. So what we're doing, I don't know. How we're going to do it, I don't know. But I'm working on it. Let's see. Hang on here a second. 7-3-8-8-4-5-2-0. We got some people in the chat room. Yeah, it's just, it looks like my guest is... bailed. She was a little nervous about coming on. This was a story about her son, Jimmy Suskey, who was injured July 1st of 2010 in an accident. He suffered a head injury. And they love those people with head injuries. By the 12th July 2010, he had contracted bacterial meningitis. And so here's this man with this massive head injury. He had to have a cranioplasty where they put the plastic cap over because the bone is gone. But, you know, within 3 days, 4 days, this man had bacterial meningitis. Bacterial meningitis is cross-contamination where a medical worker has not washed or disinfected their hands from their routine activities or from dealing with another patient. The bacteria transfers and on this open wound just invades the body, mostly through the spine and spinal cord. It's horrendous. He was at that time at Regents Hospital in the Twin Cities. And after some time, and I'm really not sure, I think it was by August 3rd, they sent him to Bethesda Hospital in St. Paul. And he stayed there for some time. And Tammy, his mother, was there as often as she could. She's from Stillwater, Minnesota. And she has to take a bus in there. And out where she lives, they have a commuting bus that runs in the morning and two in the evening, and that's the only way in and out. They don't have, like, everyday bus service like you would think of in a city. And so anyway, she would take the bus in, spend the whole day at the hospital, and then take the bus back home at night. And she had taken her camera with her, and she had taken pictures of him. And at first that was okay. And then she came to his room the one day, and the therapist was in there working on her son's feet, you know, flexing, massaging them. And she said, I told them, well, I'll just come back when you're done. She had to go to another floor of the hospital to what they called the breakfast room. And she waited there until they were done with his therapy and went back. And she said, at the end of the day, as she's getting ready to leave and her son had just gone to sleep, she said, this nurse came to the doorway of the room and screamed at the top of her lungs about her taking pictures. And she said it was such a jolt to her already brain-damaged son that it threw him into a seizure. So she told them as she was leaving the hospital, because this is the last bus she can catch to go home, she tells them, I don't have time this evening, but tomorrow we're going to talk about this. And what your nurse did was unprofessional and uncalled for. Why would she come into the room and scream like that in a private room with a patient who has a head injury? She comes back the next day with her sister, both of whom have medical directive powers for him, and both of whom have durable power of attorney. They have a meeting. The hospital says, we're cutting your visitation rights and you can't see your son anymore because you took pictures. The sister says, where's your policy on that? Why can't they take pictures? What's the problem? And, well, they didn't have any such policy. She says, well, if there's no policy, what is the problem? And she said, they changed it immediately, and she has all of this on tape. They changed it immediately and said, you interfered with therapy. And so they cut her down to 1.5 hour a week during mealtime, with other people around and a security guard. Sarah Harvey can relate to that. She has to have one too. You know how dangerous these women are. And she said, we have had to go in my son's room. And this reminded me so much of the Sarah Harvey case. She said that we went in there, we've had to clean broccoli out of his trach and other debris that had gathered there. She said he was just laboring, breathing because of what they'd done. They started medicating him. And they were giving him Risperdal, Seroquel, Zyprexa. Sound familiar, anybody? And these kinds of drugs. And they were giving them to him in combination, which, of course, could create a lot of problems. We've got a caller here. Hold on here. Hi, this is area code 651. Who's calling?
This is Tammy Hook.
Hi, Tammy. Hi, I didn't think you were going to make it this evening. I was telling them your son's story, and I had just gotten to the part. Tammy, I want to thank you for coming on. I know this is extremely, extremely difficult for you, and, you know, I'm just going to caution you to, like I told you earlier, just take it slow and take a deep breath now and again if you have to. And I had gotten to the part, Tammy, of you being berated for taking your son's picture.
Right, correct.
And go ahead.
Oh, well, this started out with my son got a traumatic brain injury, auto-related, and he was brought to Regents Hospital. And can you hear me okay?
Yes.
And from there, he was that was July 8th of 2010. Then on July 12th, he had contracted meningitis, and then he went through a craniotomy on July 12th. On August 3rd, he was transferred to Bethesda Hospital in St. Paul. And then a few weeks later, he was moved. He was moved to different floors, but then he was moved to a area for that specialized, you know, for his therapy, for rehab.
Yes.
Area where you have to have a key to get in and out of the elevator to go up and down. And from that, one morning I came to visit, and this was my first time seeing his, you know, going to his room on that particular day in that unit. And I said, well, I saw that there was a lady in the room, and I went down to the breakfast area to wait for Jimmy. And there was a lady who had a camera like mine taking pictures of her husband. I asked if that would be okay if I took pictures of my son, and they said that would be fine. They said just don't, as long as you don't get any other patients in the picture. And I said, that's no problem. And I have those pictures that I took. And after Jimmy had breakfast, they came and got him and said he's going to go to therapy on the second floor. Now, each one of these floors, you have to have, like I said, a key to get into the elevator. And so I said that, they told me, they said the first couple of weeks we don't allow family for therapy. I said that would be fine. I waited and watched CNN all day. I said, I'll see you, Jimmy, for lunch. I'll be here when you get done. And he had lunch with me, and then he went back to therapy. And then they brought him up after that therapy, and they said, okay, now you can have some time to visit your son. We're going to bring him down to his room, and then we'll come get you. And I said, okay. When they came and got me, they brought me down to his room, got to visit with my son. My son started talking. Turn up the air conditioning, Wanda. No, just push a button on it. My son started talking, communicating with me, and I thought, well, I will, videotape his progress, you know. And this is my son. I love him, and I just, for my own records, you know. And next thing I know, a lady came in the room. The first time this lady came in the room, she said, okay, I think it's time, because I only was going to get 20 minutes or so with my son. And because I had to catch a bus back to Stillwater. And so I put away my camera in a booty, then in a camera case, and then in a backpack, and I had it on the floor. And this is when the lady came in and asked me to put away the camera. So I was polite about it. Then I had about 10 minutes left to spend with my son. He said, Mom, will you be here for dinner? I said, I'm going to be honest with you, Jimmy. I have to catch a bus back, and this is the last bus going out, so I won't be able to be here when you wake up, but I want you to get some rest. And I sat there until he, you know, I promised him I'd sit there for the next 10 minutes, and he fell asleep, and he was in a deep sleep, and I thought, thank God, because that's what we want to see as a mother, you know, that he's, you know, sleeping at least and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked back at the clock, and I had about... you know, less than 5 minutes to get to the bus stop. And right at that point, before I could even get out of my chair, a lady came in and just screamed out, you had a camera, and I called the security guard. And, I mean, but the way she came in barging into the room just screaming about it, it didn't make no sense to me. When I looked at my son, her screaming caused him to go into a seizure. And, I put my pointer finger to my lips, and I said, shh. And I pointed to the door, and when I got out the door, I said, ma'am, there was no reason for you to come in his room and scream. I said, if there's a problem with the camera, I wasn't told that. And I said, I would have gladly, you know, but I was told it was okay to take pictures of my son and record. And right, and so I didn't say anything other than that. I got in the elevator and went down, and she had called some people that were down there already waiting for me. And I don't have time for discussion about this right now because I have to catch a bus, but I just want to say the nurse did was unethical.
Tammy. Mm-hmm. Tammy, who were the people she had down there?
Like the administrators and stuff like that.
Security guard
came down. But the security guard knew I didn't do anything wrong. He felt bad. He felt compassionate. He's just doing his job. But it was the like health
board administrator,
the board administrator,
and the doctor,
and the and I could not believe over having a camera that this kind of thing could happen.
Well, what happened was she took pictures of concrete evidence of the grievance that she had filed, which was neglect and physical harm, which was abuse, that he encountered at that hospital by someone, one of the staff members who worked there. And so with that in mind, keep that in mind, they were in fear of a lawsuit because she had evidence. You can't, a picture will never die. A picture will never go away. The picture tells the truth. And the truth be known, this actually happened, and everybody was getting right on down the line from the nurses to from the doctors told that this lady filed a grievance. We got to stop her.
Well, here's the thing.
And that's how they did it. They stripped her with no court order right after the grievance was filed. I went to the meeting. I was appalled. I said, I was on your website last night, and it's a nice website. And I said, so what the heck is going on here? You guys encourage on your website to take pictures. Now you cut my sister's visitation because she's taking pictures? I said, let's get down to the real McCoy here. What is it? And I said, did she do something wrong? And they said, no. I said, okay, then let's spit this out. Right here, right now, we're all adults. What's going on?
Oh my God.
And they couldn't tell us. Instead, one of the administrators gets up and says, I'm done with the abuse. I said, what? And,
what?
Yeah. She jumped the subject.
But here's
and acted like we were, you know, for asking questions, we were being out of line. Okay?
Now, you reported all of this, didn't you?
We didn't know. Reported it?
I have pictures. I have recordings.
Oh, yeah.
I have audio.
Yeah.
Ever since my son's injury,
she's
I've been
got
documenting.
The audio of it
now,
right there in
okay.
the meeting.
Please don't, talk at the same time. Please don't talk
yes.
at the same time. And one
I think,
thing I want to ask, how old was your son when he sustained this injury?
He was 30 years old. This was 2010, July 8th.
Yeah.
And
He's
going to be 33 in exactly 2 more days. And it will be his birthday. I have no idea where my son is. 87
days.
I don't have a phone number. I don't have an address. He's. I got my son on recording, though, through all the times I was able to speak to him. His biggest concern, I mean, when he got to talk to me, he said, Mom, now this was, okay, from Bethesda, he was transferred to Robbinsdale. He was only there for less than a week, not even a full week. Robbinsdale said that Bethesda, they're responsible for the bed sores because that's the condition they sent him in. I also have pictures of other abuse that my son went through, and that is wrong. I think I got retaliated on because I said what the nurse did at Bethesda was unethical, it was unprofessional, and I feel she needs better training. You don't barge in a private room, screaming your head off, and put a brain-injured person who's in a sound sleep into a seizure. And I felt really bad because I had to leave at that moment knowing, well, not only that, they were forcing me to leave, but to know that now my son was in a sound sleep and now look at the condition he's in. That's when the meeting was called the next day, August 26th. And I stopped by at Radio Shack and I brought a recorder and I let them know I am recording this whole meeting. And I want each person, when they talk, one at a time, and I want them to state their name and their job title position. And so I got the whole thing on recording, and they admitted I did nothing wrong, but when the meeting was over, they still had it typed out that I could only see my son a half hour a week.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even get calls
Tammy,
to check on his condition. Not even allowed to call.
Tammy.
They even restricted that. I said, they wanted me to sign that. I said, I refuse to sign this. This is not a court of law. How dare you people, you know, just strip me of my motherly rights when my son needs me the most? You know,
Tammy, did they Did they ever file for guardianship? Did you ever find where they had filed for any kind of, like, protective custody, guardianship, anything to sever your rights?
That was all in the making that they were trying to do, and they were trying to...
They were afraid of a lawsuit.
I think they were afraid of a lawsuit, basically. But the bottom line was that my son, I think the other thing that they had against why they were pissed off about the camera was because my son was saying... Mom, do you remember when I did the power of attorney and health care directive when he was 30 years, or when he was in his 20s, he did one? Or 2010, he did one. Or 2002, I'm sorry. And I said, yes, I remember that. He did one at a bank. And he says, that's the main thing was Jimmy's concern was, you know, if I were never to be able to allow to speak for myself kind of thing. You know, depending on whether he gets better or not. But he was, at that point, very much speaking well. This is not somebody who was brain dead. This is somebody who was doing really well. And so he was making his statement of, you know, and I think that's what. Now, the guy.
And you said that he went to he was then sent at one point to this Golden Living Linden facility.
So Robin still less than a week, that's when he called for an attorney. And then that's when he put everything in writing again. Now then,
okay,
from there...
Tammy, has there been any court activity? Have you been into court? Has there been any motions filed? Has anybody done anything other than just to harass and try to intimidate you?
Right. Pretty much that. They have... What they did was they filed for an emergency guardianship when he went down to Linden. And on me. And before it even went to court, they stripped me of my visitation again because anytime I tried to advocate for my son, like when they would drag his feet backwards, they took away his medications, three medications that my son needed. And I go by, prior to the emergency guardianship. They were setting it up. They were setting it up to assassinate my character, to make me look medically neglectful. I never once... the doctor down there. The doctor works at Stillwater Clinic, and she, by her own admission, has almost 2,000 patients there, has no time to be down at Linden, barely. And so I never had even gotten to have a conversation with the doctor. And yet, so how can that be? They try to make it sound as if I was the one insisting, and that was part of the setup, to make it look like I was requesting him off the medications that he needed, when in fact... as far as the blood pressure goes, medication goes, the Tylenol and the anti-seizure medication, which I would never ask for my son to be off of that. I had a witness with me when I came to visit my son one evening, and I was stopped by the nurse's station, and they told me that the Dr. Witte decided, was their exact words, that the doctor decided to take him off of those medications. I questioned that. I said, what medications? They said, the blood pressure medication. I said, why would she take him off of that? And their response to me was, she feels his blood pressure is stable, and that's why he doesn't need it. And my response was, well, maybe that's the reason why his blood pressure is stable, is because he's on that medication. And then they took him off. Anti-seizure medication was another one they told me about, Dr. Witte. And I said, why would she take him off of that anti-seizure medication? They said, because thus far, since he's been here, he has not had a seizure. I said, well, maybe my response was maybe the reason why he hasn't had a seizure is because he's on the anti-seizure medication. Then the Tylenol, and they took him off of. And then the other thing was is they accused me. Now, according to the Patient Bill of Rights, I was at first not, you know, as far as the Botox go. But they put him on antipsychotic medication. According to the FDA black box warning, someone in Jimmy's condition cannot have it because it causes Tarvon dyskinesia, malignant neuroleptic malignant syndrome, serotonin syndrome. It falls under cruel and unusual punishment. You cannot give it to the elderly. You cannot give it to people who have this particular type of brain injury and or anybody with dementia. And even though my son was only 30 years old at the time, the point is they gave And that, it wasn't just one. And then there was no consent, no informed consent by either me or my son or my other DPO. They incapacitated him with these medications before court. Even though before my son was on these medications, he was doing well. But once they gave him, it was a setup. It was a setup to make him look like he is so incapacitated that he cannot make any decisions. Even though when he was in Robbinsdale before he got to Linden, he was able to speak very clearly to an attorney. For him to be able to hire his own attorney to come in there, somebody who none of us ever even met, and this attorney validated. Now, this is the attorney that my son paid for. Validated that he is fully competent, completely competent. He can tell you exactly what a DPO means, exactly what a health care directive means, what their role is, and he made sure he made it irrevocable. But when he got to Linden, and that's like a slap in the face to his attorney who does this for a living. And I got that videotaped even and recorded. Now, she, for her to say he's, and he signed it and everything, because he knows nobody's going to look out for him better than his mom. Now, then for Linda to turn around and incapacitate without consent on these medications, the ones he don't need, that fall under cruel and unusual punishment due to the fact that they cause severe, not only incapacitate him to the severe sedation, he couldn't talk any longer before this. He was eating. He could feed himself. All these things.
Ma'am, Marty, this is, excuse me, this is her sister. She's getting a little emotional, and I can understand.
Okay.
Believe me, I am too for 2.5 years. No one to call, not 1-800 number. You can, an animal can get punished and be beat, and you can call an 800 number, and they come out and take pictures, and they take the animal and get the animal help. In this case, DHS don't really do a full investigation. They are one-sided. They call it inaccurate.
There was no evidential hearing.
But before with Lyndon, this was an act of deliberate. From the outside, like I was, looking on the inside, it is, you could see like a crystal ball looking back at things that 1 week prior to Jimmy's court, that was so set up. Everyone from the family who saw him couldn't believe he looked totally vegetabilized, couldn't talk, couldn't put his head up like a normal person.
That's what those drugs are intended to do.
That's why they put him on it, Tammy, because they wanted to
Can I ask something here? Do you still have the durable power of attorneys, the medical directives? Are you still in control of those, or have they thrown those out?
They stripped me of every right, and they awarded the guardianship to a guardian ad litem who is so severely neglectful, and my son doesn't have a voice. She speaks for him, and I say, well, he could speak for himself. His forehead is, the contractions are so severe that even his forehead is contracted. They used the mother, me, as a scapegoat for their neglect and blamed it on me and called it medical neglect.
Yeah.
They accused me of not paying the bill even, which was $1,150. When I got this bill in the mail, immediately I paid it the same day the bill came in the mail. But yet, before the bill came in the mail, they had already sent out a delinquent letter that I was severely delinquent, which this was the first bill. How can you send a letter out on the 10th and then slandering me, making me look like an irresponsible mother, and double-dipping? And this letter also went out to the commissioner that this poor young man, the mother's so irresponsible, she didn't even pay the bill. So they collected twice on that bill, not only from the state, but from me. You notice how they failed to mention that I did pay it?
David Gassaway was the Washington County judge.
Which is DHS, but the thing is How can DHS be the state licenser of these places, and yet that's a conflict of interest when you get a DHS judge, and when there's a catastrophic injury, how can they give him an attorney that's only representing his best, not Jimmy's best interest? He's just there to collect on the on his settlement money. Jimmy didn't get to see any of his settlement money. He doesn't have a decent wheelchair or anything.
No.
I've provided for every single one of my son's needs, down to the electric toothbrushes, everything.
The attorney that she has right now, currently working on the case, to reestablish her visitation rates, which I said, that's it. I hope it's more than that, because this girl here, from David Gassaway, the judge of Washington County, that was in there, said that they gave her maltreatment of vulnerable adult neglect. Now, my goodness, my sister's raised the kid over 18 years of age, and, you know, wouldn't you think this would have went on?
Never had a criminal record. My son has always lived in nice places, always well provided for, very educated, very responsible, strong Christian.
Here's what was all... Who was all in the, involved? I guess it says Tina Gunlickson, Washington County Community Services, Carrie Powell, physical therapist assistant
from Linden,
Dr. Marie Witte
from Linden,
Stillwater Medical Clinic.
She's the only doctor.
And so this was all.
The character assassination is so extremely severe, and I could not believe that a social worker from Linden would make a comment that we can do whatever we want now, and if he dies, he dies. Too bad.
Yep.
That's her exact words. And she said that right in front of my son, you know, that now we can use him as a guinea pig, basically, where the only medications I was concerned about was the antipsychotic drug, because it was to the point where even the contractions in his throat, he couldn't even swallow a simple pill, a pain pill that he needed.
Yeah.
And with mixed crushed with applesauce, and
his voice got soft.
He was having respiratory failure even from it. He had a seizure one day, and they didn't even call me. And this is when I was still health care directive, and they made a false allegation in the report. Not that this was on any court record by any means, but they made a false report saying mother was in jail on drug charges. They knew they were going to get me out of the picture. I was at my sister's house. They had both health care directive phone number, mine. They said they called me all day. That was a lie.
No.
They knew I was going to be at my sister's house. I said, if you need me, this is where I will be. Because basically they had been kicking me out of the picture.
I've got some questions here. What I want to know is this. When these people pulled all this stuff off, now they got the guardianship first by levying false charges against you and creating this false case. When you were in that courtroom, were there any other victims of these people? Have you come across any other victims of these people?
Oh, I mean, as far as not in the courtroom, but as far as in the nursing home, there was other people that even my mom noticed that were so severely, that could feed themselves before, and once they sedated them, they could no longer feed themselves or anything. According to their own records, 67 patients, an hour and 53 minutes per patient. But at that time when my son, they were doubling up the beds in the room, and so when you got 80 patients, that makes it just that much more less time. I was down there caring for my son. I applied for a disability unit in my apartment, and the financial head administration office that is in charge of Linden, when I paid her with the cashier's check that the bank types in for $1,150, the day the bill came in the mail, I went straight to Linden and paid her, and I made her sign it, and I have a carbon copy of the cashier's check. Everything went down so fast. I had approval for Jimmy's release by Dr. Witte, my sister is the one who went in and saw her, and because this was a 30-day wound healing just for a lumbar puncture, and he was to be able to come home. I had a state worker here to approve the apartment because it was a disability unit, paid for it, got the keys in my hand, and all on the same day, such collusion by even the person who lives here in the same building, being in connection with Linden, like I said. Next thing I know, that evening, I had the keys to the disability unit when Jimmy was going to be able to come home, because that's what they said I needed to have, a disability unit, and in order to get durable equipment for him, you know, like a hospital bed and things, so he could come home. That same evening, the keys were taken out of my hand, and Dr. Witte did not speak with the state person.
Has this doctor ever actually visited your son at all?
I doubt it.
Maybe 7 days have gone.
Yeah. Did she ever log into the...
To see us.
That she had...
And then they made it sound like I met with other doctors when that never happened. The only doctor I tried to meet with was Dr. Whitty, which I never did.
Everything's a false wall.
Everything's collusion. It is criminal misconduct, basically. It was all done in collusion. As a matter of fact, I could swear that that one girl, and I heard them in collusion, talking about assassinating my character. And they didn't know that I was around the corner, that I could hear them. And when I, they were
Please don't talk at the same time. Please don't do that. Okay, that we can pick that up, the conversation in the background, and it makes things very confusing. So please, one at a time.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's just been a nightmare. We've really been put through hell, and my son is crying out for his mom. The last time I saw him, you know, and I saw so many different things happen to him, so much severe neglect. At first, that charge was just neglect. When I brought up to the attention, how can I be the one neglecting him when he is in your care of this facility? You people are being paid to care for him, and yet I'm coming down here every single day to make sure he is, you know, to feed him and clean him and do everything that I could possibly do, from brush his teeth or whatever, and yet they're the ones who are neglecting him. They charge me with neglect. When I said that, how can you charge me with neglect? They try to use the paying the bill as neglect. Well, I said, I didn't neglect paying the bill. I paid the bill on the same day the bill came in the mail, the very first bill. And so it doesn't make any sense. You know,
okay.
When I brought that up, then they decided to add the maltreatment.
Okay.
And if you,
let me
anything, like, is it possible for him to have insure or anything? And they start trying to say that I believe in all natural. Never did I ever say that word. If I brought up getting him the Courage Center or anything, they would cancel appointments for the ortho, anything that he needed, and then they would twist things around and make it look like I'm the one making those decisions, and that's not true.
Okay, Tammy, let me ask you. When was the last time you saw your son?
Well, after a year went by, I got to see him April 23rd. They had transferred him out of a group. From the nursing home, he went to a group home. Once I lost complete rights to him, he went to a group home. They said, if I want to visit, it's supervised visits, fine. That's how they make more money. You know what I mean? Everybody who touches my son makes money, and by having supervised visits, no, I would never harm my son. I mean... Like I said, if I advocate, please don't drag his feet backwards. You know, his feet look like shredded hamburger. They would have the shower chair adjusted to 5'4". My son is 6'4". No footrest on it. And, I mean, I got pictures of all this abuse. Severe bed sores, everything.
Okay, Tammy, did you ever make a police report?
What happened?
Anything about...
Okay, yes, did.
And when did you do that?
When he was transferred to the group home, I got to talk to my son on this particular time. He had been being verbally and physically abused also, and he had told me this. He was in fear. It had been going on for a while, off and on. He was in fear to say anything because he has seen how his mother's not being able to be there to protect him. And it took a lot of courage for him to speak up about this, but when he overheard the woman saying she's going on vacation, taking a couple weeks off, that's when he felt, this is my chance, or I'm going to end up dying here. The other reason why he said he spoke up about it was because of there's a guy who lives there who can't verbalize, and he only makes sounds, and my son witnessed her doing the abuse to him also. And I'm not saying every single worker could be bad, but I'm saying this particular worker, that's all it takes is one worker. These people are medically fragile. They don't deserve that treatment.
Okay, let me. I've got a few questions here, Tammy.
You made this report.
Let's
though,
go back to the charge levied against you that you were in jail on drugs. Was that ever proven out? I mean, did they ever present anything? Was that accepted by the court?
The court didn't really bring it up. because I knew it was a false allegation, but the point was is that they didn't think I was going to see his medical record. I was still on the automatic calling by the hospital, which they didn't realize that. So when I went to meet Jimmy for his appointment, several doctors said, this poor young man has not had one drop of therapy. And this shows you how the guardians are. They just send him alone and have the driver put him in the building. Nobody there, you know what I mean? And
oh
so
God.
They didn't know I was there, but I recorded.
Where were they sending him to for therapy?
That was to Regions. It wasn't therapy. They were sending him to Regions for a baclofen pump. And I was in agreement. I was in agreement for that baclofen pump, which that was something they claimed that I was against the baclofen. No, I wanted to know what was causing his severe contractions. Now I'm finding out now what was really causing that. But anyway, at that Regions appointment that day, that's when I found out. We tried to reach, you know, when I looked at his medical record, the mother when he had a seizure, and which was not true because it would have showed up on my caller ID, and I was at Barb's, the other health care directive. Never did we get any calls. But instead they lied, and then they said, we tried to reach her, but she was in jail on drug charges. The woman who made that statement happened to be the nurse, head nurse from Linden, who was, her eyes were always so dead. One thing I did say to her when my son was in, when I was still in the picture, he was in a delirious pain, it's called. And I said, I find it really unusual that he is always in delirious pain on your shift, and yet your eyes are so dilated that till this day I don't know what color they are. I said, I think I'm going to have a court order that you have a drug test done. And that's, I'm sure, the reason why. Payback to, and I only made that comment to her, that I'm going to have a court order to have a drug test. I didn't accuse her of taking drugs, but I said, I would like to have you to have a drug test. Because normally when somebody's pupils are that dilated, they're, you know what I mean? And my son definitely wasn't getting medication. But the point is they also had him on Ativan, Respidol, Seroquel, Effexor. All four of those are antipsychotic drugs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, all four different. And my son has no mental illness. And not only that, he is, you know, polite, kind, soft-spoken. And
Who prescribed these drugs? Who prescribed them?
Yeah, that's what I would like to know. Who was prescribing these drugs? Dr. Mohan was one that I know of. And like I said, she didn't even tell us, notify us. There was no informed consent, nothing. There was no reason for it. I asked, what was the reason for him getting these medications? And the nurse with the dilated eyes, and she always acted off the wall, but she said, well, you know, my younger sister was up here visiting from Colorado, and she said, well, when your sister was saying goodbye to him, she said, I'm going to be leaving for Colorado tonight. I will not be seeing you, Jimmy, for about a year, but I'm really going to miss you. And he was enjoying seeing Teresa. She was up here for about a month, so, Teresa saw him every day. And he showed a tear in his eye. And so she said, well, he did show a couple tears in his eyes and said, I love you, Teresa, I'll miss you. And I said, that's a normal human emotion. So you're drugging my son with these drugs because he had a tear in his eye and said, I love you, I'll miss you. That is not a reason to OD my son.
Well, Tammy, if it's no consolation at all whatsoever, but what you're recounting here is exactly what they do to everybody who gets targeted by this criminal ring that's operating in these courts. And one of the things that they always do is levy charges, unfounded charges, against family members and friends who try to protect or extricate that person from the situation. And these charges are brought into court most times as unfounded. Investigations do ensue, or they will simply stay on the record and nothing is ever done, but it stays on the record and it's made to appear that the charges held and you were responsible for whatever they claimed you did. But there's never any evidence produced because they're bogus charges. And they do this routinely. The drugs, the chemical restraint of your son, the combination of drugs that they're giving him is lethal. These drugs are lethal all on their own, but in combination, even more so, they can stop his heart suddenly. And these doctors have to know this.
Absolutely. And matter of fact, my last conversations with him at Linden, he was to the point it caused such severe contractions, I mean, from head to toe, you got to understand. His forehead even is in a permanent asphyxiated state where he can't even close his eyes, basically. I mean, his forehead is completely, like, all the way up, as if you were trying to open your eyes as wide as possible. And he can't sleep. Either he's overly sedated or he can't shut his eyes, even though he's extremely sedated. It's just unbelievable. He has lost, now since they transferred him to the new place because of the woman who was hitting my son in the head, and she was choking him, strangulating him, hitting him in the arms and legs. He's got severe atrophy because of these medications, severe spasticity and contractions, which they've used the mother as a scapegoat and blamed those contractions and spasticity on me. And yet my son's
good.
Verbally abused, and that's how they took my son. That was their reason, was due to the mother's lack of medical knowledge as far as medication goes. Well, guess what? It turns out I was right. I was right. Those medications do cause Tarvon dyskinesia, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, serotonin syndrome, and it leads to death. There is a black box warning by the FDA. I told them, you can argue with me all you want, but you know what? Are you going to argue with the FDA? Black box warning? I said, let me tell you something. My son dies, you've been warned, because this is premeditated, pre-medication murder. And if he dies, I'm making sure you go up for murder. And
At this point, we're going to take a break here just for a few minutes and, take a breath, calm down a little bit. And you're doing really well. I know, Tammy, you were very nervous about coming on. You're doing very well telling this story and recounting what happened. But we're all going to take a break here, grab a cup of coffee, whatever. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. So, Tammy, you sit tight. We'll be right back with you.
Okay, thank you.
In November of 2011, our Congress had passed a measure to open the door to equine slaughter. Now, a predatory industry seeks to gain profits by sales of American horse meat for overseas consumption. 80% of Americans oppose horse slaughter, and the environmental and social impact will be devastating. To learn more, please visit www.equinewelfarealliance.org.
Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A Pure Trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a Pure Trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
See, nanocells are real small. 1,000 times smaller than these dust particulates. You inhale it, they go to work replicating, spreading like a virus, multiplying in exponentials. 6 months' time, I could have 100 million people converted, ditch diggers, porn stars, and presidents. Not one would be the wiser. 100 million people who buy what I want them to buy and vote how I want them to vote and do pretty much damn well anything I figure they ought to do.
trying to speak the truth is a waste of time because nobody wants the truth. People don't want the truth. God forbid it would all go down in flames. It's the lies that keep the construct going, don't you see? Spread by the vested interests in the government and the private sector and the churches and the stock exchanges, all fabricating and spinning and telling stories that keep 300 million consumers happy and stupid and spending. Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy? I'm not the deluded one. You are.
And this is, of course, has been just a crushing story and just one in a long line of stories exactly like it. Tammy, where you don't know where your son is now, is that correct?
Correct. They will not tell me. They will not give me an address, a phone number. She made me put a blocker on. And she's saying it's Jimmy's choice. But Jimmy, every time I've talked to Jimmy when before I got to talk to him, before they moved him, this was out of retaliation that Jimmy made a report of abuse. It was investigated, and my son told the exact same story. They let that abuser come back to work after, that's when I said, wait a minute here. My son has told this story twice, even to investigators, that this woman has hit him in the head. He has a cranioplasty, and that means the top of his skull is plastic. For her, when she's given him a shower, to be able to hit him in the head, strangulate him, hit him in the arm and the leg, and he's repeated the story, and he's witnessed her do it to another patient there, client. This is wrong. I mean, even if you have 10 good workers and one bad, but actually it seems that all these workers in the group homes, because of the Olmstead Law, where they had to take people out of institutions and put them in group homes, the institutionalized mentality is still there. They treat these people like they are not human. These people, workers, should not be working. This is not a factory job. You're not working with parts. You're working with human beings. These people have loved ones. They have a heart. They have emotions. They have feelings. They are made out of blood and flesh and soul and spirit. And this is wrong. For people to go in and treat this like it's some kind of factory job and not even care, most of the time the people are so lazy. There was no food there at all. The one time I was there, there was chains on the refrigerator. And the other thing, that same girl who abused my son, that same, I don't know if you want to call her lady or what, but that same worker, she said my son had not even had his nose. He is not in a power chair, so he can't move around. He only has the use of one hand. They don't even offer him a Kleenex box or anything. And for months, they never wiped his nose ever. And by their own admittance, I asked my son, because he was talking out of his mouth, you know, like it sounded like his nose was plugged where he couldn't get no air in or out. I looked over, because me and my mom, this was one time when I got to visit. This is before he's in the place that I don't know where he is. I said, Jimmy, do you have a cold? And he said, no, Mom. He says, and the lady came in. She heard me ask my son if he had a cold. She says, no, he doesn't have a cold. She says, we don't blow noses here. And I said, she goes,
what?
Because we find it gross. And I said, I went and got a tissue, and I cleaned my son's nose. And I said, well, that's what mothers do. I don't find it gross. But anyway, the point was is that, you know, something so simple, because I blew my son's nose for him, they kicked me out.
Okay, for God's sake.
My main concern, above all, I mean, that's just
we want to know.
I want to know where my son is. I want to know where my son is.
Someone in the chat room here has suggested, Elaine from Nazca, wants to know if you've been to the courthouse to review the records, and she said the records may say exactly where he is.
No, they don't. They don't.
Okay.
This guardian told me that if she feels like it, she can move him out of state.
And will.
And
here's
they
what
do
I
this
don't
a lot.
Get.
Yeah, go mm-hmm. ahead. They do this a lot. It's called, what do they call it, sharing under this quota system. If somebody's quota in one state, if they haven't fulfilled it, which is they're tied to their paycheck and their agency staying open, if the quota isn't filled in another state, they have too many, they will ship some over to them to make sure their quota stays up there and they get their money. We have had, at one time I had a sociologist on, James Roger Brown, who's done a lot of work with these kinds of things. And he said that at one hearing in Missouri, when he was bringing up, and they actually passed a law to stop all of this in Missouri, and of course it isn't enforced. But he said he actually heard one of the state senators say, I don't care what we do here as long as it doesn't interfere with the funding. And this is basically our government's attitude towards this. As long as the money mill keeps rolling, we really don't care what happened to these people. And you brought up another salient point here. This isn't a warehouse job, but they are warehousing these people. And the money mill keeps running. Now, is there insurance involved in this?
Oh, I'm sure there is. And, you know, his money went to a state attorney that did not represent Jimmy. And, of course, you know, Jimmy's never going to refer to his mother as Exhibit A, B. They had, first of all, he wasn't even present. They had him sedated nearly to death, but by law they had to have him on the phone. Nobody's there. Who knows if they even have the phone near him? I had to literally cry out in court and say, Jimmy, are you there? Wake up. Wake up. Because I knew they had him knocked out at that point because he couldn't feed himself or talk anymore or anything. And he's, after his lengthy or, you know, quick, boring thing there, Jimmy wasn't awake through it. Who knows if they even held a phone near him until I screamed several times for Jimmy. And he says, Jimmy, we just went over A, B, and C. You agree? And he goes, yeah. And he only agreed because he didn't even hear what he was talking about. Jimmy was told that this man is there to get you with your mom, to look out for your best interest. That never happened. He was only looking out for his best interest, which was milking Jimmy's settlement money.
Right.
Do you
have any idea how much that settlement was?
He didn't know what Jimmy's wishes were. Jimmy's previous lawyer that he hired, not the state-appointed one, the one Jimmy hired, did a DPOA health care directive, said Jimmy is fully competent until somebody can. Now, I want to know how come it's illegal if somebody were to drug somebody at a restaurant and take them against their will and hold them hostage by medicating them to the point of sedation and rape them over and over again or whatever, that's illegal. Why is it not illegal for a nursing home to be able to sedate someone, because there's such a thing as date rape drugs. To me, this is like a date rape drug. They knock these people out and then call them incapacitated. Well, you don't have to be injured. Anybody could drug and knock someone out and do what they want to them against their will. If you're knocked out cold, that's basically what they did to my son. And he can't even have that one medication. It'll kill him. Oh, Alvo.
Excuse me, Marnie?
Yes.
I heard this, but when you were talking transfer and this and that out of state, I also heard that they don't even have to inform the family members if they're fully awarded of their death. They cremate them, too, because they don't want, if there's any autopsy, they don't want anything to be out there.
Exactly. They don't want any of the injuries documented. They don't want the blood levels on the drugs, and that's the other thing, unless you specifically ask for blood levels to be tested for those drugs.
Right.
They
and
don't
who's gonna
do those
ask?
Tests.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know where he's at. We have no number. He said to us the last time we saw him, if you don't get me out of here, I rather die. And that broke my heart. And I want to know where he's at, who we contact. There's never been one damn person in 2.5 years that could tell us nothing, who to contact, anything. Where's his wife? We want to know. This is not, as far as I'm concerned, the state should be sued by a class action for embezzlement upon the people and abusing the people, larceny, because they did it with an act of intent.
Yes.
And say we march, and we march, I mean, as much as we can go and get these people, the state, the feds, whatever. Why do the feds make laws? Why is there a constitution if we can't even stand for these people and stand
up? This is something I talked about in the beginning of the show. We have all kinds of laws on the books, but unless it's applied to you, they're not applied. And these people operate outside of the law, and they operate as untouchables. This is a mafia-type organization. It's operational in every state, in every county, in every city, and it is well-funded. And these people, everybody from the judge on down, is making money off of the condition your son is in. And
Marty, you know what else I noticed reading the laws and the rules and the regulations is that they left deliberately loopholes for these people to jump through and act like monkeys. Why I think this is what I think. I think it's time to stop the loophole and make our own, okay, to stop it and be firm about it and then cage whatever monkeys want to jump after that. Because they shut right down to the judges, lawyers, doctors, nursing homes. I don't care who the heck what your name is, what job you do. If you're involved, you're in it.
It truly is a racketeering.
And you should be punished. This is cruel, unusual punishment to the victims that are, his skull was off his head when they took her out of the picture. He cried for her. She cried for him. Would you do that to some animal?
That's the worst part of it. Girls, I'm going to open up the phone lines now if anybody wants to call in with questions or comments for our guests. Please feel free to do so. The number is 917-388-4520. So if anybody would like to call in and speak with our guests, we encourage you to do so. There's so much wrong in this case. There is so much law breaking in this case. There is such a massive violation of civil rights, of individual liberties, fundamental freedoms. This goes on every day. And I agree with you. We need to form a coalition. And like I say, it's going to have to be done within each respective state. And where we can help out by showing up in another state to support people who are objecting to this, I think we should. But we have got to get this exposed and not just this under the radar. Hopefully somebody will pick it up. I've had so many suggestions from people. Call Dr. Phil. Call Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil isn't going to do squat. And I don't want to hear any more about Dr. Phil. When he did do a show on guardianship abuse, he, of course, went out and found the most dysfunctional family he could find and paraded them across the screen and then ended by saying, and this is why we need professional fiduciaries to step in and level the playing field. And that told me everything I needed to know about Dr. Phil right there. And he's also one of those people, for all you who keep saying, call Dr. Phil, call Dr. Phil, who says repeatedly, when he has a child on there that's acting out, says to the parents, you realize they have a biochemical imbalance. There is absolutely no test. There is no x-ray, no scan. There is nothing to support or give evidence to this claim. Nothing.
Citizens Commission.
Go ahead.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights International. You can go under on the antipsychotic drug side effects, CCHR International, on their website. And I would say people to kind of get hooked up with them, too. Most of our most violent crimes are committed by people that are under those medications that actually cause them to get psychotic. It's the medication.
It causes what's referred to as a brainstorm. It causes a misfiring, a massive misfiring of the neurons in the brain, and it causes this erratic behavior, and it causes them to hallucinate and become psychotic. They know exactly
right.
what these drugs are going to do, exactly what they're going
and
to do.
And especially with somebody with a brain surgery like my son, you cannot have these medications.
We can't even call the authorities to report him because we don't even know where he's at. Even to get a blood level test on James right now. Okay? We have no way of knowing what they're doing to him. He could be dead. He could have already been cremated. But his birthday is coming up on Tuesday. And he's 33.
My baby will be 33.
We want him back. We're not giving up.
The last time I saw him, he had fear.
He did.
Fear and sadness. I never seen such sadness and fear.
Dehydrated.
And he was so severely dehydrated. Just, I couldn't believe it.
Like,
and he malnutrition. They didn't have feed in him. They're not caring for him. He had ulcerated heels, ulcerated ankles, ulcerated butt. These people are
killing
my
They're
son.
Animals.
And they're getting away with it. All they care about is the money.
I swear to God, I want a lion in a cage and put every one of them in it and forget about them.
It's unbelievable what they can get away with doing. This is a legalized abduction ring.
So why can't we go after this? Why?
I want anybody out there listening to start a civil action.
Yeah.
Anybody who's
right
listening,
now,
our loved ones should be tortured like this to death.
We're next. We're next. If this don't get stopped, I'm in the baby boom era, and I don't even want to think about it. I think I'll put a gun to my head before that happens, and I ain't kidding.
Well, I have heard many, many people say that same thing, that they
are
so terrified.
This is a Holocaust.
And I'm going to say, forgive me, Lord. But
these medications started out from the Nuremberg's code?
Yeah.
Nuremberg code, yeah, yes, and that's exactly where they began developing these drugs, and all of them have been put onto the market without any legitimate testing. And when you read that black label you're talking about, what they list as possible side effects are not side effects. That's the actual intent of the drug. This is a huge, you know, population experiment, and
it is
so.
We're the
but
guinea pigs.
Side effects are what they list there: sudden death, heart attack, stroke, brain bleeds, dyskinesia, vomiting, diarrhea, muscle atrophy. That's the intention of that drug.
And they do it, and then they blame it on the parent when you're trying to get them off of that medication.
Yeah.
They say, I'm neglectful for wanting that medication to be taken off. They take away the medications that I insist my son be on, and the brain surgeon said he should needs to be on, and yet they took him off of it and said, I, the mother, took my son off the, I'm talking the needed medications, the blood pressure and all that. That is what he needs. The antipsychotic drugs he did not need. My son had no aggressive behavior, nothing. And I mean, they that's why I got medical neglect due to the medication.
They lied in this paper here on the court record.
Their whole record is contradicts itself.
They said you gave him the muscle spasm. And
it says I gave him the mother. This muscle spasm and contractions. Yeah. It wasn't me. It was the medication that they were giving him.
Exactly.
The antipsychotic
this
medication.
Is in the court paper.
It's right in the court paper.
Yep. Everything is
so
twisted.
His,
he couldn't even swallow food.
Take a deep breath here. Settle down.
No.
Ease up. You're both talking at the same time. I know there's a lot to tell here, but I do want to encourage you. You have a computer, don't you, Tammy?
Yes, I do have one now.
Okay.
And at the time when this...
I want you to get on Facebook and join the group Boomers Against Elder Abuse.
Okay.
And the second one is the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, if you're not already hooked up with them.
Okay.
And that's NASCA. And we support, this show supports both of these groups. They're very active and they work very hard trying to change things and mostly to give support to give you a voice, a place to go where you can tell what's happened and get it out there in the public. They have thousands of members, thousands. And
yeah.
So hopefully, you know, you can find other people that you can connect with, other people that you can talk with, maybe people that can tell you what they've done that's worked, what doesn't work. But I think if we can draw on these groups, if we can draw on them and state to state, pull in as many people as we can and force government to listen to us and put a stop to this. And these people that have committed these things, I heard this judge that I had chased down the one day said to me, he said, well, even if you got everything stopped right now, even if you could do that and you can't. I thought, well, that's revelatory. He said, mm-hmm. even if you could, you can't do anything about what's already happened if you pass a new law and say you can't do this anymore. You can't go after these people. He said, because that's a de facto law. And he said, that's prohibited by both state and federal constitution. I said, it is. And I'm well aware of that, except by precedents. The federal government and our own state government has violated that several times. So you have set precedents that in severe situations, in an emergency situation, and who's to determine what's the emergency? The people involved. I said, in those situations, a de facto law, passing a law after the fact, would work. And furthermore, I don't know of any statute of limitations on any of this stuff. It's criminal activity. And
mm-hmm.
I said, these are crime rings operating in these courts with the collusion and cooperation of these courts and these judges. And I said, write down many times to the clerk of court who forgets to file motions, who rejects motions, who changes calendars and dockets and everything else for these attorneys that treat them like their pet gopher. And I
mm-hmm.
said, so there are ways around all of this. I said, one thing I have come to learn in these 15 plus years of hitting all this stuff really hard on many levels, on many issues, is the law doesn't mean squat. It doesn't mean anything. And but I said, but what we are talking about here is the predatory nature of this business, the abuse of human beings. These are not units. These are not statistical numbers in a quota system. These are human beings this is being done to. And I said, if we can't do anything else, then how about this? Let's put all of these people who did this under guardianship, because obviously, considering their behavior, they're incompetent and they're not able to be out in general society. So I think they all ought to be guardianized. And I said, I'd like to apply for that job and handle the guardianship myself. And
mm-hmm.
he just stood there and looked at me. And I said, the other thing I want to talk to you about is this. The Bar Association and these phony judicial oversight boards, this is nothing but a protection racket. And
mm-hmm.
I said, they protect their attorneys, and if an attorney goes against them and tries to do the right thing, I said, it's, you know, legal cannibalism. They tear them up. They disbar them. They sanction them. They destroy their character. They ruin their business because you
mm-hmm.
cut the money machine off, and
exactly.
Or you tried to. Now,
and it's very hard when you have a loved one in this situation, it's very hard to even obtain an attorney. Anyone who would want to take on such a case, because that's what they're up against.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like you say, they go right after the attorney. And we've
yeah.
had many cases where people have hired one attorney after another attorney has spent thousands and thousands of dollars to
and
have that attorney at the last minute turn around and say, I can't represent you, and walk away. Now, there again, in any other situation, if you contracted with someone and they agreed to provide you a service for X amount of dollars, and then at the last minute said, well, I got your money, but I'm not going to do this, they'd be up on fraud charges, breach of contract. But that appears not to be the case when you're dealing with these immoral attorneys. And my opinion is, Tammy, my opinion is, if you have an attorney, you've just thrown money away. These people are not going to represent you. And even if they would, the Bar Association, the Judicial Board, the probate judge, and all of their good buddies aren't going to let them. So
mm-hmm.
we have got to handle this ourselves. We have got to to take this on ourselves and quit turning to the same system that has encouraged and allowed this to happen. And expect
we have
them
to
make it
we
right.
We the people need to stand up, and anybody out there who's listening, who's going through what I'm going through, because it's not just the elderly. Anybody could have a loved one who ends up in a wheelchair, disabled, and next thing you know, you're completely out of the picture. Just and even though they are not incapacitated, they will incapacitate them with these drugs, I guarantee you that. And next thing you know, they will put the blame on you, twist everything, and remove your loved one, never to be seen again. Or that loved one is being dehydrated, bed sores. The abuses is so unbelievable. It's hard to comprehend that these people could even be, you know, who love is the most important thing. Like my son has a saying, love is first. And that's the first thing he told me, love is first. And that's the most important thing to him is having his mother. And they tried to make even my son, which is, this is not coming from his voice. And when I have gotten to talk to him, I asked him that. I would ask him, have you gotten the messages that mom called? And he said, no. They don't let me have a voice. They don't let me speak. They speak for me. You know, and that would be like on a weekend when I could get a hold of them. I haven't been able to know since they moved them. And he told me that having his mother is the most important thing. Seeing that he wants to live with his mother. He made me, you know, DPOA, healthcare director. That's another thing. That should be respected. What good is a healthcare directive and DPOA when you have it done up by a lawyer? When these people can treat it like asswipe, excuse my language, but that's how they treat it.
Yeah. Well, and the
you
judge,
and
see,
that's
this
supposed
is
to
one
mean
of the things
that irrevocable
we need
DPOA and healthcare directive should mean something. That's a person's wishes, you know.
Exactly. That's one of the things we need to do is wrench control of these courts away from the judiciary branch in the sense of this. They make these rules that they set out, which is actually lawmaking, which they're prohibited from doing because they claim they have legal effect. If they have legal effect, and there's a difference between legal and lawful, when they legalize something, they take something that was a crime and make it okay under a legal system. But if you look at the law, it seldom complies with the law. And so, but these people need to have this power wrenched away from them. They cannot be allowed to make rules. They cannot be allowed to say that we're not going to let a pro se into the court, or you can't file motions into the court, or if you say one more thing about the Constitution, we'll put you in jail. You cannot say these things and get away with it. But they do it every day. They do it every damn day of the week. And even when this
you know
is
what I
say,
we
attention, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I say that we the people, anybody who is going through what I am going through, like I said, it's not just elderly abuse. It can happen to anybody who has a child who ends up, you know, who's an adult child maybe, young, like my son is young. You know, anybody who's suffering, because this is a, we suffer the same emotions as if a stranger took our child, because it is a stranger, just to literally rip your heart out. There's nothing worse than crippling the spirit. That is harder for my son than being in the wheelchair. You know, and he's made that clear. It's not the wheelchair that is his biggest problem. It's them crippling his spirit. You know, where he can't even see his grandma, his loved ones, his aunts, his cousins. Nobody, he can't call him. He can't talk to him. He can't. They won't give him. My son has no rights. I said, if my son was the worst serial killer on the face of the earth sitting on death row, he would have more rights.
Right.
He could get visitation. He could have make phone calls. My son has never been criminal ever in his life. Neither have I. Why is this happening? This is a legalized form of abduction, and I'm suffering the same emotions as a mother whose child has been abducted.
Well, exactly. And the thing is, you know, the worst part of it, Tammy, is they try to make each of you who are involved in these cases feel like you're the only one, and you get to having this feeling of isolation yourself. This is why I encourage you to get involved with these groups where you can talk to people that understand what you're saying, understand your frustration, and can lend you some at least moral support. This, you're exactly right. This is a death of the spirit. And I cannot imagine the fear that engulfs these people caught in these situations to know that they're at the mercy of people who don't give a damn if they live, die, or survive, just as long as the money keeps rolling in. And
exactly.
How does anyone,
to such a mercy that even if they were to get their nose blown, or if they are need to be cleaned, or anything, or fed, or anything, they're totally at the mercy of these people who don't care. I say we file a civil action. Let's drop a cause for action. If there's any attorneys out there listening,
they won't touch it, Tammy. They won't touch it. There is so much evidence in these cases. There is mountains and mountains of evidence of wrongdoing by the judge, of violation of rights, of abuse, neglect,
if there's any attorneys or anyone out there or anybody listening, please, I am begging for help.
Let's go to the media.
If there is any investigators that want to offer their time to help me rescue my son, any attorneys who want to help me volunteer their time to help me rescue my son, please, I am desperate. My son is desperate. Our whole family is desperate. We need some resolution to this. I have audio, video, recordings, pictures of all the neglect and abuse. I have witnesses. I have affidavits from all the witnesses. Please, if there's anybody with all my evidence that I have, somebody should be able to help.
I have an idea, Tammy. Tammy,
mm-hmm.
We have talked about getting together since we're in relative close proximity to one another here.
Mm-hmm.
Getting together, why can we not take your pictures, your video, your documents, make a YouTube video out of it, and launch this thing on the internet and send
mm-hmm.
a copy of it to every legislator, every senator, and then let them tell us again how they didn't know. Nobody told them. They never heard of such a thing. This doesn't happen. Somebody's lying to you. Then have them tell you. I think it would be worthwhile putting this together.
Amen. And I think you're right. And I don't think the people out there that work for the state are dumb, deaf, and blind.
They know exactly what they're doing.
And
oh, yeah.
I think we should release some balloons when we all do this. I think we should set a date and have these people who are victims to come to the state capitol with balloons, and we can release them in honor of these victims.
I think everybody should bring a picture of their loved ones. We should have a get-together where we march on the – we go see the governor even and go march on the Capitol. We need to get this on the news that this is happening. We need to demand to see the governor, the attorney general, and we have to demand that people start doing their jobs.
Because of the collusion.
That's the thing. And like I said, I've called so many of them. I called Al Franken's office again here about a month ago and got one of his staffers, of course, and I said I'd call him because he had put out in February of 2012 a little short bill that was supposed to help with the elder abuse in Minnesota, and he cited the fact at that time that the national figure was $2.6 billion stolen from estates annually because of this criminal ring operation, but he didn't mention them by name. And this thing was only about two paragraphs long, but basically what it amounted to was the same thing the feds did when good old sleeping Herb Kohl was heading up the Federal Committee on Aging. And they just simply, it was a call to fund adult protective services to a greater extent. The last thing we need is to give these people more money. They are a threat to the elderly population. They are a threat to our vulnerable disabled adults. These people are not there to help you. They are there to get
you in the
system.
We need to create more laws of protection from these people and give it back to the individual. That's what we really need to do and bring it to the state and feds. Because without that, just that, and through everything else, I mean, pretty much, because if we have protection and mean it, like, you cannot take this child away out of state. I don't care if you're guardian. We need to know. We need a phone number. This here, that alone, it, to me, is false imprisonment for the victim. He don't know what the heck and why.
I want to write a story called Lost Liberty, and I would like to have a movie done on this,
yeah.
on my story.
Yeah.
This is a story that has to get out there,
yeah.
and I want to do where we get everybody involved.
Okay.
If there's any movie makers out there, any writers who want to write this book, this story, I don't care. It should be on Lifetime. It should be on Lifetime. This needs to be exposed that this is going on.
Yeah.
And like I said, it isn't just the elderly anymore. And these are people who should be protected in their twilight years and be loved. I want to start, my son, he says love is first. And I want to start a nonprofit Love is First organization.
Yeah.
That people have somebody to turn to advocate because the families don't have no one. They don't have
no one
to turn to, no one to help them.
No.
And if you're simple-minded and you don't know the justice system because you've been an outstanding citizen and never committed crimes or nothing, and you don't know the legal system, they slam dunk you so fast and hard it's like drowning. And it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's like having a car pull up and just take your loved one away.
Yeah.
You know, and,
well,
and I even asked the attorney if we could call Amber Alert. I mean, this is how desperate. And he said, no, that's for children. I said, what? No, that's for abducted people. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It shouldn't be just children. Humans.
This is an abduction. This is truly an abduction, and it's like my son's being held for ransom.
Yes.
So when the money runs out, who knows?
We're looking at these baby pictures as we speak.
I'm sorry. Please don't cry. Please.
I feel like I'm in a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like it's like this isn't even America. How come we have our men fighting terrorists when we got urban terrorism going right in our healthcare system? These are the biggest terrorists there are.
I mean, excuse me, but Marty, what do I have to do? Strap a bomb on me and go to the state capitol? I mean, what do I have to do to get noticed? I mean, really, really, is that why there's people like that in the world that have to do that? I don't I don't need to feel like that. But you do inside, you know, you feel like somebody
feel like,
you call everybody and nobody gives a damn.
You go around in a circle. It's another number, another number. The budsmen don't do anything. None of these people really care about the victim here.
No.
And that's
they don't.
They don't. And all these phone numbers don't make a difference. You know,
they will send you on a cat and mouse chase if you call the state attorney general's office. As well, you have to go to the police department, but you've already been there. And they said you have to go to the sheriff's department, but you've already been there. And of course, nobody here in the state of Minnesota seems to be aware of the fact that this state is signed on to the Uniform Probate Code under the UCC filings, and they are bound by certain conditions, which means that the sheriff's department, upon request, must investigate thoroughly a claimed abduction in these situations, and that no one can be deprived due process. And they just blow by that like it's nothing, and because apparently to them it is nothing. And
and the sad part is families are hurting. Families are having nightmares. Families can't sleep. Families can't get out of their pajamas because they're on the phone all day trying to call everybody they could think of, general attorney.
It increased my stress level so bad.
Yeah, and, you know, no family should have to go through this. And what I think of what my son must be going through, it's like being held in a POW camp, you know, and being cut off from the world and being tortured. These medications are torturing him. You know,
why can't we get attorneys that are like attorneys that go get the innocent people out of prison?
Well, we have tried. I've tried approaching the ACLU because this is a clear civil rights violation, and they're big on that. And but of course, unless you're an illegal immigrant, they're not going to get into it. They most times won't even respond to you. I tried contacting ARP. I don't know how many times. But they're basically just an insurance company, so they don't want to get involved. And I've even tried, like, going here where I live, going to a senior center up there in St. Cloud that's quite active, asking to speak, because they have speakers come in and they do different things. And I asked if I could speak to these elderly people about the possibility of this happening and try to come up with ideas of what they could do if it did. How could they protect themselves from this machine that's at work here? And they said they were afraid I would upset people, so they wouldn't let me talk. And then I found out that they checked with their attorneys, and their attorney said, oh, no, you don't want to listen to any of that. And so, but this is how they keep you quiet. So it is going to take some kind of public display. It's going to take confronting these legislators and videotaping them, declaring the fact that they don't know anything about it and why you're crazy and this never happens and who told you that and that's just a big lie and somebody's not telling you the truth. Yeah, it's you, you know, because it's just, and I think it's unfortunate this doesn't happen to them. You know, to their mom, their dad, to their children. I don't, not that I wish harm on anyone, but I think it's unfortunate that this hasn't happened to them so that they could understand the depth of devastation, the level of abuse and neglect, the terrible situation these people are in. And this has to be like a POW camp. It has to be.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And living in such extreme danger and fear. What kind of way is that to live?
My son had a bruise on his eye. He had ulcerated heels and ankles, butt ulcerated. They kept him in the chair from sun up, even before the sun was up. He's supposed to get out of the chair for a couple hours to lay down during the afternoon. They don't do that. He's got the most uncomfortable wheelchair. They have not ordered him any heel cushions or elbow cushions, which are very inexpensive, $15, you know. It's unbelievable. They don't turn them every 2 hours. I know that. I have provided so many things, and my sister even got them cell phones, and the guardian stole those. They take whatever they want, whatever you try to supply to make their life more comfortable, the workers take. If you buy them any music or CDs or movies or anything, they take it. They don't follow health code rules. There's health code violations. My son, his special needs cups were filled with, caked in black mold. The inner lid was caked with black mold.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so for several months, he had to drink black mold. And when I went to see him, and I did go unannounced, even though my sister said I was grandma, I said I'm his mom. But we went there, and my sister noticed the black mold in July. By the time I went in December, still black mold in his cups, which is something that I've always provided. I went out and bought all new cups for him. I bought all the undercover sheets, you know, the hospital. I buy all the pH, the hospital-grade wipes, you know, bath washes and stuff. I have provided for everything. She goes, you know, he has 5 electric toothbrushes. I said, yeah, I know, I bought them. Because they will not spend a dime on my son. Matter of fact, most of the stuff I buy him, some of the things end up, I'm like, well, where did your movie go? Where did these go? I bought him a brand new electric shaver, you know, nice one, all of these things. And yet, when I went there, I said, and they don't do memory care or nothing with these people. They don't let them have any life at all. They're lucky if they can see the sun, the light of day. They don't have any technical assistance, such as a computer, you know, a touchscreen computer. They're, like, even the guy who couldn't talk, no technical assistance for him either, you know, so that he could communicate. And I know that they have that out there, but there was none for him. And these people, you know, like it's around Christmas time, you buy your loved one stuff. The workers take it home with them. It's kind of like this attitude, well, oh, my husband would love that jacket. I'll give that movie to my son. And that, you know what I mean? It's unreal. They take whatever they want.
What we've seen a lot of times is, and this happens particularly with elderly people, that not only do their cell phones disappear, but so do their hearing aids, which I have found there's a huge black market in used hearing aids because they're so expensive. And some of these people have had 2, 3, 4, 5 hearing aids bought for them that just mysteriously disappear, even their dentures, their glasses, anything that... And you take those things away, like from a person who's either elderly or in your son's condition, disabled, you take these little things away from them. It may not seem like much to you, but it's a major thing to them. And with the elderly, it cuts off their communication. It you know, it isolates them even more. By the taking of the glasses, they can't see. They take their dentures, and many elderly people are very self-conscious about that. They do these horrendous things that can be done only from the perspective of tormenting that individual.
Exactly. And I would like to know if Jerry Ann Olson is working back at the Magnolia home, the one who physically and verbally abused my son. I think they moved him so that she could work back there. She was there for 2 days after my son made the reports, and the reports were validated. And she, for them to allow her back there and for her to be able to verbally abuse my son and threatening him, saying, you told your mother what I did to you, and she called the police. And, you know, imagine that you have to be in fear. You're in a wheelchair. You can't run and get away from that abuser. I called them and said, how dare you allow that woman to go back and work there? And, you know, I threw enough tizzy where they did give her a leave or fired her or whatever, but I think they just said, well, once we transfer him, you can come back to work here. So what, she can still abuse the other people there, the ones that can't
right.
talk? Is that why they
you know,
my son? I'd like to go stake out that place and see if that woman's working there. And if I see her show up, I'm going to make another report. Can a pedophile work at a daycare center or a school and rape a child or abuse a child that's in a wheelchair that can't run and get away, and then allow that when the child makes a report on it, are they going to really allow that person back? It's the same thing. It's wrong.
Well, there's too many of these people in the system, not only in the hospitals, but especially when you get into these nursing home and home health care systems. There are too many of these abusive people who absolutely, from their actions, obviously despise and hate that patient and the fact that they are supposed to do anything for them. I think that there should be psychological testing, although I don't believe in it, but there should be some kind of testing to weed out these people that are actually sociopaths. And
right.
Have absolutely no emotional attachment, don't relate to other human beings because they seem to gravitate towards this kind of employment. And
a lot of them are just an evil, and a lot of them, I think, have issues with chemical abuse issues. A lot of them are just plain evil, weren't raised
right,
you know, and they're greed. You know, they don't want loved ones there to see the abuse.
Exactly. They don't want any witnesses.
No,
they don't want any witnesses. And anytime you don't want somebody to see what you're doing, it's because what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way this works. And that's, I think, in all of this, girls, what bothers me is there's always this veil of secrecy and there's always this isolation and this hiding and refusing to answer, or, you know, but there's always this big wall constructed that you can't get over because they don't want you to know how badly they're abusing that person. They don't want you to be able to testify to the fact of how badly they're abusing that person. And so the system is just corrupt from one end to the other. And Tammy, I do want to get together with you. You and I need to sit down and talk and make a plan. If there's anybody else out there from Minnesota, we need your input. Get a hold of us.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a hold of me at ppj1@hush.com. We need as many people gathered on this as we can possibly get. I intend to approach the legislature and both of our federal and state senators because somebody is going to put a stop to this one way or the other. Girls, we're down to the last couple minutes of the show. I want to thank you for coming on, Tammy. I know this was extraordinarily difficult for you. You did very well. And,
thank you. And
you
I would like to say, if anybody wants to reach me, they could reach me at avaha.love.com or avaha.love@gmail.com. That's A as in apple, V as in Victor, A as in apple, H as in happy, A as in apple, .love@gmail.com. And my phone number is 651-430-1324. If there's anybody out there who has passion and a heart Please call me. I would like to start a nonprofit organization where we raise money so that we can get attorneys that are willing to stand up for this at a low cost. And we need to put love is first. Love is first, because the families are taking the abuse too. Their love, not only their loved ones, but it is a nightmare for the families to go through this. So please call.
Yes, it is.
Hold of us, and let's get something going where we can get attorneys that aren't going to be, that can stand up and stand strong to fight for the rights of these people. This is a Holocaust going on, and we need to stop it.
It is.
We definitely
Want to thank you both for coming on, and Tammy, I will be in contact with you, and we'll discuss future plans and try to put something together here where we can actively get involved in this and try to do something about it. And everybody who is in the chat room tonight, I thank you for being there, as always. I truly appreciate the support. We have a lot of listeners tonight, and so hopefully we have tapped into something here in Minnesota. Tammy, I know there are also excuse me.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There are also many groups here in Minnesota. If you type Minnesota corruption into your search, you'll come up with tons of pages on groups that have assembled in the state on the corruption in our courts, and many times it's in family and probate courts. We need to get in touch with these people. We need to hook up with them and see what we can get done here. We'll be back Sunday evening, or next week, of course, and I'm working on a couple of guests. Hopefully one of those will pan out.
Mm-hmm.
This Thursday night, of course, is the Ruthie Report on illegal immigration, and that show has got so monstrous I can't even believe it, especially with them passing the DREAM Act here in Minnesota, giving out-of-state illegal immigrants tuition breaks while jacking up the tuition rates for college on state residents. So we'll be discussing that at great length, and I will see you all next week. Tammy, thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you so much, Marty. You have a good night. Bye-bye.